Good morning. In this gospel today, we hear another parable about the kingdom of heaven. And these past few Sundays, as we've been working through this part of Matthew's gospel, we've been hearing these different parables about the kingdom of heaven. And today we get yet another one. And our Lord says in this particular parable that the kingdom of heaven may be likened to a king who's having a great wedding feast for his son. And before we move on any further, immediately what should come to mind is the king is God the Father. And that great wedding feast for his son of course being Jesus Christ, that great wedding feast is the Mass. And for those of you who are familiar with the book of Revelation, the last book of the Bible, and perhaps with a lot of the work that's been written about it, particularly Dr. Scott Hahn's book, The Lamb's Supper. It's a wonderful book. If you've never read it, I encourage you to read it. It's not only very deep, but it's also not too heady. It's a wonderful book about the Mass, and he basically relates the entire Mass to the book of Revelation and talks about all these different connections, and in the book of Revelation how it talks about the wedding feast of the Lamb has begun. And he makes all these beautiful connections. I can't say anything further about that now, but that's the first thing that should come to mind, is God the Father is this great king, and he's holding this wedding feast for his son. Now, when everything is ready, he sends out his servants to go and get the invited guests, and they all refuse to come. He sends out servants a second time, and yet again they refuse to come. It says some ignored the invitation, some went away, some just went back to their business. Some of them, not only ignoring the wedding invitation, killed the servants, mistreated and killed them for bringing them this reminder, this news, hey, the wedding feast is ready, come. And it says the king, enraged, sent his troops, destroyed those murderers, burned their city, and then he sent his servants out and says, just bring people in off the streets. He says, those who were invited were not worthy to come. Go, therefore, out into the streets and bring the good and the bad alike. He says, just fill this hall. And that's what they do. They go out into the streets. It says they gathered the good and the bad alike, and the hall was filled with guests. Now, I want to stop there real quick because we can wonder why those people who were invited, why didn't they come? Right? Because imagine for a minute, remember we had that big royal wedding, not we, the United Kingdom had that big royal wedding back in the spring, and it was such a big to-do. Imagine if you were invited to that, okay? You didn't know the people, but just for one reason or another, they wanted you there, once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Or let's say, you know, the president, and current politics aside, you may not like the current president, but current politics aside, imagine the White House was hosting a huge wedding for the son or daughter of the president, and you were invited, right? Once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Who wouldn't go to that? Again, politics aside, who wouldn't take up once-in-a-lifetime opportunity like that? Just to go and to be there and to say, I was there, and to experience what would inevitably be a wonderful, amazing, once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Who wouldn't take up that opportunity? We're going to come back to that, but that's the first question that should kind of stick up in our head is, why would people not come to this great wedding feast? And by the way, we hear that wedding feast described in that first reading from the book of the prophet Isaiah. He talks about on this mountain, the Lord of hosts will provide rich food, choice wines, and he talks about destroying death forever in this great feast. And that mountain is referring to Jerusalem, but also the New Jerusalem. Jerusalem was built on a hill, and the New Jerusalem is always in reference to heaven, to that eternal wedding feast, again, that we hear described in the book of Revelation and so easily connected to the Mass. So why those people didn't come? I think the answer to that question is at the end of this gospel. Because once the servants go out and they just pull people in off the street, the good and the bad alike, and the hall is full, the king comes around to meet his guests. And he finds this one poor fellow without a wedding garment on. And he says to him, my friend, how is it that you came in here without a wedding garment? and it says this guy was reduced to silence. And the king, instead of saying something like, well, let me help you out, I'm sure we can find something here, what does the king do? The king says to his attendants, bind his hands and his feet and cast him into the darkness outside where there will be wailing and grinding of teeth. Wow. I think what's going on here, I think this gives the key to why some of those people aren't coming in the first place. I think it's safe to say this guy had a wedding garment, but perhaps his wedding garment was not in proper condition. Perhaps his wedding garment was not as clean as it should have been for a wedding, and perhaps he was not willing to do whatever it would have taken to have gotten his wedding garment into proper condition. You know, when we were baptized, you received a white garment after the baptism. The priest places this white garment on the person right after they've been baptized and says to them, you know, you have become a new creation in Christ. See in this white garment, and the priest is addressing the baby here, see in this white garment the outward sign of your Christian dignity. And then he goes on, he says, bring that dignity unstained into the kingdom of heaven. See, all of us have that wedding garment already because it is our baptismal garment. All of us have it who have been baptized. So this guy here, because it wouldn't make sense otherwise, why would the king throw this poor guy out for not having a wedding garment if it wasn't his fault? The implication here is that it is his fault. How dare he show up without a wedding garment? Obviously, it wouldn't make sense if the king is getting mad at someone for something that's not his fault. The king throws him out. Why? Because he has a wedding garment. But for one reason or another, and again, maybe it wasn't as clean as it should have been. And maybe he wasn't willing to do what it takes to get it cleaned and get it ready for this wedding feast. And I think that says something about why those other people didn't come either. Perhaps those other people who didn't come, who decided to turn away a lifetime opportunity because they were perhaps too embarrassed. Or perhaps they were just too stubborn and stuck in their ways and were not willing to do what it takes to clean off that wedding garment. You know, when we were baptized, we get that white garment, and it symbolizes the inward cleanliness of our soul, pure white at baptism. And of course, we're all sinners, and thank God we have the sacrament of confession where we can go and we can get that wedding garment cleaned off again. And pray God we live a good holy life, and before we die, we also have a clean wedding garment. Fortunately, in God's mercy, for those of us who die without a perfectly clean white garment, but an okay one, we have purgatory. We have that one last opportunity to get our soul cleaned off, to make it as perfect as it needs to be to enter into heaven. You know, I want to share with you some statistics about our mass attendance. And this is not unique to Sacred Heart. This is pretty standard in most Catholic churches. But, you know, of all the people that we have on our roster, about one-third show up every single week. Another third shows up once a month, about once a month. And I hope, for the good of their own souls, I hope that they're going somewhere for Mass. Now, the last third only shows up Christmas and Easter. And, of course, what drives me nuts as a priest is to think that then they just see him marching up for communion, you know. You know that if you miss Mass even once, through your own fault, of course, it's much different if you're in the hospital or sick or physically can't get there, snowstorm, whatever. But missing Mass even once, you're not supposed to go to communion. You're supposed to go to confession first, get that wedding garment cleaned off before you come to communion. But I've often wondered, why are those people not coming to Mass? You know, it's easy enough to say, oh, well, the priest isn't very interesting. Okay, fine, but it's not about the priest. Oh, well, the music's not very good. Fine, it's not about the music. Oh, well, the church is ugly. Fine, it's not about the church. It's about what's going on here at the altar. And I think we don't understand that enough. I don't think we realize what it is that's going on at the altar. I don't think we realize that great wedding feast is happening right here at the altar. And this is one of those things that, like I said, I can't get too much into now, but beautifully described in Scott Hahn's book, The Lamb's Supper. And he talks about heaven kissing earth in the sacrifice of the Mass, and then being fed with the flesh and blood of the Son of God. But I wonder, too, if there's something going on about that wedding garment. Because, you know, everyone is welcome in the Catholic Church. You could be the worst sinner in the world, and you are welcome here at the Catholic Church. You could be in the depths of sin and depravity, and you are welcome here at the Catholic Church. But no one, not you, not me, not the Pope himself, no one is welcome to come as they are and stay as they are. Everyone is welcome to come as you are, but everyone is going to be welcomed and then challenged to clean up that wedding garment, to get it in a state worthy of the wedding feast of the Lamb that is happening at this sacrifice of the Mass. So I would just wrap up with this, that number one, let's try to get a greater appreciation of what it is that is going on at the Mass. Let's try to foster a better understanding of the Holy Sacrifice of the Mass. But number two, let's be willing to challenge ourselves and, if need be, to challenge others to keep that wedding garment that we all received at baptism, to keep it white and clean, so that when we do come to the wedding feast of the Lamb every Sunday, but then also at the end of our lives, when we go before this great King, that he will welcome us in to that feast, and he will not throw us outside where there'll be wailing and grinding of teeth.